Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What a great privilege to get to talk with Dr. Angela Franks. We don't do it too often because she doesn't put out a book too often, but it's always great when it happens because she really is one of the best. And we started to talk a little bit there at the end of the hour about Catholic education, and that's what we're going to talk about this hour. Does it work? Can it work? What are the new paradigms? What are the new... Oh, that was kind of a fancy word. I don't even actually know what paradigms means. I just came out. I don't know. I'm sitting here with an educator, and I thought I got a little big for my britches. But the new modes and methods, I know what those words mean. If you'd like to talk about Catholic education, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Dr. Darren Lovelace, principal of Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento,
correct,
California, and a longtime Catholic educator. Dr. Lovelace, thank you for being here with us.
Appreciate it.
How long have you been in Catholic education?
So I would say around 10 years. I started teaching at Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento in 2016. Mm-hmm. Was there for 7 years. Got my doctorate of education in Sacramento. Left Sacramento for 2 years in Denver as a principal of an elementary school, parochial school there. And now I'm back at Cristo Rey in Sacramento as a principal. So education longer than that, but Catholic education for about 10 years.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to say there are, in some circles, there is a kind of denigrating of Catholic education, I think, because people think the parish schools just aren't what they were. I mean, there's maybe a sense that the Catholic identity has been damaged at Catholic schools. Is that unfair?
I think you're going to find there's a lot of variety. I can speak only to the experiences I've had, certainly. Mm-hmm. I think parish schools, in my understanding, are engaged in a lot of difficulty around the shift in what it means to be Catholic education in general. Who's running the schools? Who's staffing the schools? Right, for many years it was the religious orders.
Oh yeah, sure.
Right, and now the needs of the laity to provide the leadership of education in the Catholic schools has put a great burden on them financially. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of factors, I think, leading to some of the challenges that are happening in parochial education. My experience more in high school education in a non-parochial setting, certainly the challenges are there too, but they're probably different. And so I think Catholic education is also experiencing some of the challenges that education, broadly speaking, is experiencing, at least in our culture, at least in the U.S.
Yeah. It's funny, I think we used to make fun of Catholic education because the nuns were too strict, and now we make fun of Catholic education because it was like, is it Catholic enough? Like, nobody gets a break.
Yeah.
Catch a break. But let me ask you this. I mean, given the massive shifts in culture, the huge, tectonic, I guess is the word I'm looking for, shifts in culture, does Catholic school still work? Is it worth doing, and can it work?
Mm. It's interesting that now I think Catholic education has an opportunity that could be pretty unique right now in terms of the possibilities that Catholic education has to speak into our culture. Your previous guest was talking about just the shifts around identity and what is real, right?
Right.
And so I think about one of the metaphors that I think of when I think about education in general, but Catholic education in particular, is this Platonic idea of education is turning the soul so that it can embrace and understand reality better. The Catholic education has a particular charism and gift to say, yes, we understand what is real, because of our understanding of who God is through the revelation of Jesus and his church. And so we have the opportunity to help students understand what realities with a capital R and how that might differ from or come into conflict with what some of the cultural messages are around what is real. And so in a way, I noticed the title of this was The Future of Catholic Education. And I think in some ways it's going to the past, is embracing what the Catholic educational models have always been. And so you'll see, for example, there's a rise right now in classical Catholic education around the country, which is an expansion of the rise in classical education in general, which is a somewhat of a recognition that the modern methods of education may or may not be working as well as we expected they surely would have with this understanding of it's progressive, it's new, it must be better.
Yeah,
but I think what's happening is people are understanding maybe not So many, many classical charter schools, for example, are popping up. But the classical movement, of course, has roots that the Catholic Church would say are just part of what education is, which is helping understand reality better, who we are as human beings in relation to one another in our society, but ultimately what is our purpose. And that is where I think the Catholic educational model offers something which perhaps is unique.
I have to say I'm quite taken by your definition of what of the work of Catholic education to direct the soul towards reality, because mm-hmm. everything can be integrated under that definition. You got to study chemistry because chemistry mm-hmm. tells you something about reality. You got to study physics and math and literature. All of these point to aspects of reality, mm-hmm. but the ordering thing, almost right. like what Dr. Frank was talking about the last hour, the thing that lines up all of the iron shavings
yeah.
in their proper direction, that magnet that does it all, is the person of Jesus Christ.
Right. What's interesting is I think in this time where we're doing a lot of reflection on the Second Vatican Council, right, there's all the conversation around the teachings of the Council as they now relate to all sorts of aspects of our life as Catholics. But it'd be very interesting to folks asking this question or these questions to go back and read what the Second Vatican Council promulgated around education. There's an entire declaration on Christian education, on Catholic education. And in that document, and I wrote it down because I didn't want to misquote, but it says that true education aims at the formation of the human person in the pursuit of his ultimate end and of the good of the societies of which, as man, he is a member and in whose obligations as an adult he will share. So this idea of, wow. right, what is education about?
Yeah.
It's about us understanding our ultimate end and then how we are engaging with the society of which we are a part.
Yeah.
But it's that first part, right? It's the ultimate end. That's what our education should be about. And, you know, will you find that in other educational settings? Possibly. Will you find the fullness of understanding of it in a Catholic educational system? Hopefully, right? That's what we would offer in addition to that.
But do you have to say that up front? Because I would imagine there's a lot of parents who put their kids in Catholic school because they want private school and they're willing to put up with that means an hour of religion classes mm-hmm. Every day, you know, yeah. Like they think of the religion part of it not as the horse that's pulling the cart, mm-hmm. but they think of it as just another item in the cart.
Right. In my previous role, when I was in the Archdiocese of Denver, a big part of the conversation around what does it mean to be a Catholic school, which was part of a wider conversation that's happening across the board, I think. But it came down to the metaphor that we use for this, right? That the Catholic part of Catholic education cannot be frosting. Like
right,
on a cake,
yeah, right.
But it's the yeast. It has to be the yeast that infuses the entire.
Everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think it's probably the case that if a Catholic school treats its Catholicity as frosting, it probably won't survive. If it treats it as yeast, then what is that going to do? It's going to show those who are interested in a Catholic education that sets them apart from what they see not working in the culture. If all it is frosting, then really what's going to happen in the end? Whereas if they're looking for something ultimately really different and deeper, then they're going to be drawn to schools for which the Catholicity of the school is just part of who they are in every aspect. So yes, in math class, you may be talking occasionally about how math represents the order of the universe. And what does that mean? It points to... Right? It points
right.
to a deeper reality. I only say that because I taught math for 7 years. But yes, all of those. And then what does the church have to say about these things so that whether you're in literature class or history class or talking about current events, that we have a tradition and we have something that the church will have probably meditated upon for centuries, if not longer, that help us answer those deeper questions, which are really at the heart of all of those things.
I wonder if you would... concur or be sympathetic to this thing that Dr. Stacy Trusankos tells us all the time, and she's a chemist and she teaches chemistry to high schoolers and college age people, and she says they actually learn the chemistry better mm-hmm. if they know that they're studying the handiwork of God. She mm-hmm. says putting it in the context doesn't just help with the God part, but it helps with the science part. They know this is not just some random, I don't get this, leave me alone kind of thing, but they're studying the way God constructed his own creation.
I think it gets back to that reality question. If in educational circles, right, people talk about how does learning become sticky, so to speak, is when it's integrated with other things.
Okay.
Right. And so, you know, in Western education in the U.S., especially kind of the factory model of education, which we've adopted since Horace Mann and all of those folks in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, this idea of compartmentalizing subjects. Right. And we still do it. We still have students have a period of math and they go to a period of English and then a period of chemistry and so forth. It sort of builds this mistaken idea that these things are all separate from one another. That you learn your math and then you learn your English and somehow there's no relationship that happens between them. Well, if you have the capacity to say, well, yes, there is, right? There's a deeper reality that all of these things speak to. It would, I'm not familiar with that person, but it makes a lot of sense to me that you're showing those connections. And then it begins to be easier for the student to say, oh, all right, I see how these things might have some relationship to each other, which is what we want them to be able to say.
Dr. Darren Lovelace is our guest. If you'd like to talk about Catholic education, and maybe it's in a specific way, you have a very specific question, or maybe in a general way about the role of Catholic education or the possibilities for Catholic education in the world, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. I invite you to listen to Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. On Catechism in a Year, you'll encounter God's plan of sheer goodness for us. Throughout the year, we read through the Catechism of the Catholic Church with direct quotes, plus time for explanations and reflections. I hope you can join us every day or as often as you can.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've got 50 of our new releases and bestsellers on sale for just 10 bucks a copy over at shop.catholic.com. Now is the time to go. Till midnight Thursday, Honolulu time, you can get 50 of our bestsellers for just 10 bucks a copy. 50 of them on sale for just 10 bucks a copy. Check it out at shop.catholic.com. Dr. Darren Lovelace is our guest. He's the principal of Cristo Rey High School. That would be Christ the King for those of you who are Spanish challenged up there in Sacramento, California. That, by the way, Sacramento means sacrament for those of you who are Spanish challenged. I'm so happy that I'm here to help you with this. We're talking Catholic education. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I have to tell you, I want to ask you about this, that I was reading Pope Leo XIV has a new document out on poverty, on the poor, really. It's on the poor. And a bunch of paragraphs in that document are on Catholic education as one of, he puts it in the group of the primary things that the church does and can do for the poor. Were you aware that he had done that in that document? And what do you think about that?
I have not had a chance to read the document, but I did scan some of the highlights and the headlines. In other words, the document headlines themselves. And I noticed that he had that section on education. And it certainly is true. Being in Catholic education, you know the names like Jean-Baptiste de La Salle, certainly, right?
Yeah.
In the school that I'm a part of, the Cristo Rey schools are a heritage of the Jesuit teaching tradition, which again is very strong. So there's this idea that the church's role in education has long been not just part of who the church is, but what the church sees as its mission to everybody, and it's especially the marginalized, right? Those who are struggling for whatever reason, economically, spiritually. It's certainly an entry point for the church to embrace those who are poor. But I do really think that the church right now has an opportunity to speak into that and how education is part of the mission the work that we do, outreach to the poor. And I think it was, if I recall, just sort of some of the summary of what Pope Leo had to say was that the material, working to relieve the material needs of the poor is certainly something we ought to do, but we cannot neglect the spiritual needs of the poor as well. Education is definitely a part of speaking into the spiritual need of all human beings.
Yep.
And that the church has a mission to that as well.
I have to say, you get to a certain age and your kids, they're on to other things. Mm. And you find out, well, you're not really supporting Catholic schools anymore. And it feels to me like if the church is going to educate the poor, if it's going to do what it's always done. Mm-hmm. I mean, the primary way it did that, and you alluded to this before, the primary way it did that was men and women committed themselves to lives of poverty.
Yes.
Well, by being nuns and priests and brothers and all that. The church educated, I don't know, about 1,000 years of people just because all these adults said, I'll live my life poor mm-hmm. and chaste so that other people can learn. But now it's going to have to be at least for the foreseeable future, people like me, who mm-hmm. our kids are older, but we've got to financially put our money where our mouth is and help Catholic education.
I think, two thoughts I have on that. Number one, to go back to your question around parish schools, right, and the plight of parish schools and so forth. I think it's important for local churches, parish churches that have schools, to really sell the message that this school belongs to you. As a parish, this is your school, even if you don't have students here, that it's a major mission of who we are as a church to educate, right? And if you don't have students, then what can you do to support that school that's part of your parish? Volunteering, contributing, whatever it might be, right? But that selling that message, this is your school. And then I'll put a plug in for the school I'm a part of, the Cristo Rey schools, which in Sacramento, there's one here in San Diego. There are 41 Cristo Rey schools around the country. And they were started in 1996, and the problem they were trying to solve was there were many students in the inner city of Chicago who were seen through the eyes of faith as being deserving of the opportunity to have a college preparatory education. But certainly they were not from families that could afford that. And so this very interesting model called the Cristo Rey School was developed, in which the students are supported through a work-study program. But they receive a Catholic education, and those schools are sponsored or co-sponsored by religious orders. Mm-hmm. So the religious orders provide the co-sponsorship or the sponsorship, which is the connection to the Catholic educational tradition. And occasionally they may provide teachers, but those schools are primarily staffed by lay people who are committed to that mission. So it's a kind of a hybrid of what you've just been talking about, people who see the vision of the importance of having this educational opportunity for students within families that could not otherwise afford a Catholic college preparatory education, but because of this model, it succeeds.
So we can come up with new models.
We can come up with new models, yeah. Exactly.
It does seem to be that this is a moment of creativity in Catholic mm-hmm. education.
I think so.
We're coming up, okay. 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. Darren Lovelace is our guest, principal of Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento, California. And if you've got a question about Catholic education, whether you're Catholic or not, you are very welcome to call here, 888-318-7884. We'll start out in Atlanta, Georgia, where Jeremy is listening on the Catholic Answers app. Jeremy, thank you for downloading the app onto your phone. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Lovelace.
Hi, long-time listener, first-time caller, as they say.
Well, we're glad to have you, Jeremy. Thank you.
I am new to Catholic education. I'm my second year teaching science and math in high school, and I was confirmed Catholic 3 years ago.
Wow.
Then following, or 2 years later, I went to Catholic schools, and it's a great fit. I had a number of very public ethical conflicts with public schools, cheating, or essentially using online courses to inflate their graduation rates, and made a big to-do of it nationally, and just had enough is enough, and I had to go to Catholic schools, and I'm very happy for that change, very grateful for it, saved my teaching career for sure. But my questions, that's my background. My question is, recently thinking about this in some training we had on principles of Catholic education, and I really don't know, especially in high school, what it means for the parents to be the primary educators of the children. when essentially they're farming out their education to us and submitting, you know, to our system, our program, our authority, essentially delegating authority. But I don't know what it means for them to still be the primary educators. Like, I don't know what it means for them to be engaged in that way. And I don't know if as a school we know how to really help them still act as the primary educators, even though they send their kids to our school.
Well, that's a great question, Jeremy, and I can certainly resonate with it as a high school teacher at the school I am at now for 7 years, and now as the principal, and I think that's always a guiding question for me now as a principal, but even then as a teacher, how do I connect with my parents, with my student parents, in such a way that there's a partnership that's formed? So I think, you know, you speak about that sort of farming out attitude sometimes, and there certainly probably would be parents that fit into that. But perhaps part of it is, as you've mentioned, what tools does the school have? What resources has the leadership provided in order to help the teachers bridge that partnership with parents? And some of it's messaging. I think about my own role as principal now is, what have I done to connect with parents in ways that help them, first of all, recognize that that's how I see them, that when I invite parents to come to back to school night or teacher or parent teacher conferences, that this isn't simply an occasion for us to tell you what we're about, but it's an opportunity for us to ask you what you need as parents. And sometimes it may be that parents aren't sure what we mean by the question. What do you mean? What do we need? We need you to educate our child, right? But in terms of parents will typically have questions that we can try to help them answer, like, how do I help my student battle their addiction to social media? How do I help my student, you know, not rely on their phones for their social life? Just things like that. And there are resources out there that we as schools can help the parents answer some of the questions they're asking that may not be directly related to the educational piece they've asked us to take on for them. But it might be more about the rest of their lives that the children are leading outside of the school. So I think just finding creative ways, and you as a teacher, fairly new to your school, you know, it can start even with just a survey you send out to parents through whatever communication tool you use to communicate with parents and find out, well, you know, what do you need? What questions are you asking? How could we help you try to answer them?
Okay, Jeremy?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. We got time. We'll go to Art in Hayward, California. Art, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Lovelace.
Yes, just a question here. Well, right now I see that the Catholic schools are doing fine, even if you introduce classical teaching to them, which is good. Now let's try to reverse this. Let's say the condition of the Catholic schools are the same as the condition of the public schools and vice versa. So would classical education still apply, given the fact that kids in high school or even elementary can't even read and write? And if that would be the case with Catholic schools, for example, then would classical education be relevant?
So do you
have a question?
I think I need a little clarification, Art, on your question. Are you asking about the usefulness of classical education in general?
Usefulness of classical education in Catholic schools. Hmm. Now, Catholic schools have the advantage because they have a very high rate of literacy. But what if, for instance, there's a switch? Catholic schools have the lowest rate of literacy, and public schools have the highest rate of literacy.
I got it, Art. This is actually a very common question about Catholic schools. Well, you're getting the cream of the crop as far as students. That's why you're doing better than public schools.
Well, that's an interesting question, and I don't know if that's, it may be true statistically, but I would say there are a variety of Catholic schools. And many Catholic schools would not necessarily have that sort of success in terms of literacy rates that you're talking about, Art. I think there is a diversity of actual experience in parochial schools and even in some high schools as to what students coming in are coming in with in terms of their preparation and their literacy abilities. I think every school is faced with the challenge of dealing with a variety of students at different levels and trying to figure out ways to help them succeed. I think in general with classical education, we're talking about a structure of the way in which the educational model is presented, right? We're talking about the grammar, rhetoric, and logic, the ways in which students engage with the materials that they're learning. And it certainly would be, there are stories out there, you can look them up, of students that come from very, very limited success with literacy that do really, really well with classical education. So there's a variety of experiences out there.
Thanks, Art. Maybe we'll have a little more say on that when we come back, but we got to take a quick break. Our guest, Dr. Darren Lovelace, is principal of Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Dr. Darren Lovelace, principal of Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento, and Art in Hayward, making the point before we went to the break that, if you compare Catholic schools to public schools, where you're getting better students, that's why you're getting better outcomes. This is a kind of trope that was actually disproven about decades ago, or maybe not disproven, but the evidence suggested that the biggest help that Catholic schools provided was to disadvantaged students that you would not say they got all the advantages about why to succeed, and that the primary reason given, I remember in this big study, was students that came from advantages that or from situations that you would say were disadvantaged benefited from the community at Catholic schools. They found that people cared about them, and this was helpful to them. This is not to denigrate public schools, which are the primary means of education for most of the people in the country and do a magnificent job in many, many cases, just that it's not true to say that Catholic schools are better than public schools at this or that because they get a better grade of student. The Catholic schools actually show their mettle most when they are dealing with disadvantaged students, which is what you do at Cristo Rey High Schools.
Cristo Rey's mission, particularly is to students with limited economic means, families that would not be able to afford a Catholic college preparatory education. And, our story in Sacramento, which is celebrating 20 years this year, is that, you know, 99% of our students are admitted to college. Many of them are their first generation to go to college. We just sent our first student to Georgetown this year. We've sent to Stanford and many other places, right?
Okay,
and
really.
these are folks that, you know, their families might not have ever thought that was even a possibility. So, yes, you're right. I think there are definitely many stories of students who come from limited means, but because of the opportunities that they have through that community that you're talking about, I think that really can make a big difference.
All right, let's go to Jackie in Covington, Louisiana, listening on 690 AM. Jackie, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Lovelace.
Hey, Doc. Thanks for answering my call.
That's how they say it down there in Louisiana. Hey, Doc. That's just how they say it.
Yes.
We like it, Jackie. We like it. I just wanted him to know because he's, you know, one of these Sacramento guys. He doesn't know how you talk in Louisiana. And, hey, Doc is a big compliment in Louisiana.
Oh, it's, very kind. It is a huge compliment. That's all I have to say.
That's
so
right.
Thanks for the work you do.
Thank you, Jackie.
So my kids go to Catholic school, and we have a fantastic, hugely great Catholic identity. However, I'm finding that we have really, the curriculum is becoming really weird. So especially ELA subjects. So I really just need advice.
I don't know what that is. ELA subjects?
English Language Arts.
Oh, English Language Arts.
ELA, that's English language.
Yeah. All right, come on. Make it simple for the host, will you, Jackie? Come on. Okay, so it's weird.
I'm so sorry.
You're getting weird education.
Louisiana people, we're crazy. the books are getting really weird and I think really bad.
Yep.
So what would your advice be for me? I love our school, but it's definitely, we're going to see some negative effects from a curriculum that is not Catholic or not, you know, I'm just needing some advice of where to go.
Make good sense. All right.
So Jackie, do you mind me asking what grade level are you talking about?
Oh gosh, I have kids. I have 7 kids. So
okay.
All grades, but
so she's covered all the grades.
Like from, yeah.
And when you say
like from.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
When you say weird, Jackie, can you be a little more specific? You're talking about subject matter, books that are chosen that are not what you would expect.
Books that are chosen. Yes. Books that are supposed to be good things. The stuff to read is really quite shocking.
So one thing I would suggest, and I don't, you may have a couple of schools that you're working with there because of the ages that you're talking about, variety of ages. But I would ask the principals of the schools for the rubric or the way in which how they choose the books they choose for their reading program, because they should have some kind of reasoning behind why they're choosing the books they're choosing. And if you can ask what their reasoning is, it'll give you, and they should not hesitate to tell you what that is. They should be able to tell you, well, this is how we decide what books are used in these classrooms. Then you have an opportunity to talk to them on the level of, you know, what's the reasoning? What's the purpose that this book was chosen as opposed to another one, which might teach some of the same lessons that they're trying to teach at a grade level appropriate, appropriate grade level, but something that's a little more, you know, there are many, many resources out there of books that are grade appropriate, but teach the kinds of lessons, whether they're moral lessons or social lessons or whatever they might be. There's a great resource I would recommend to you. There's a group called the Institute for Catholic Liberal Education, ICLE. And liberal meaning in the original sense of what liberal means, which is for freedom, right? Education for freedom, not in the political sense of liberal, ICLE. And they have a lot of resources that you can find around books that are grade level appropriate, that are solid. They're either Catholic in theme or even authorship, but they aren't all. So just some of the more, to say classical or books that maybe our parents read, because they had good messages and they were solid stories that students could learn from. So finding those kinds of opportunities to engage with your principals on the level of asking the question which you are entitled to have answered as a parent. How do you decide what books should enter this school?
That all makes sense, Jackie?
That does. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Jackie, we'd like to send you two books, if you'd like them. One for you, Secrets from Heaven, about the parables and sayings of Jesus by our good friend Father Sebastian Walsh, and one for the kids called The Truth Is Out There, a graphic novel for young people. And if you look at it and you like it and you want, you can hand that out. You can give that to the school. As a matter of fact, if you like it, just call back and we'll send copies to the school for you. Then they can have that graphic novel, The Truth Is Out There. And also, thanks for being a good sport, Jackie. Appreciate it very much. The number here is 888-318-7884. You okay if we go on to the next call, Doc?
Absolutely.
I'm going to call you Doc for the rest of the time. I like that. Maurice in Georgia, watching on Facebook. We're glad you're here, Maurice. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you all for taking my question, and God bless you all.
You too. Thank you.
My question is, thanks, sir. My question is, what can be done to get back to the true teachings of Jesus Christ back in our Catholic schools and universities instead of the woke social justice evil that has infiltrated the education of so many schools, staff, and educators?
I don't know if we lost you there, but... So it does seem...
Hello?
Yeah, no, I think we might have lost you there for a second, Maurice. Go ahead and finish your question.
I said, my question was, what can be done to get back the true teachings of Jesus Christ back in our Catholic schools and universities instead of the woke social justice evil that has infiltrated the education of so many school staff and educators? You know, in i.e., Obama being... invited to talk in Notre Dame and things, you know, that nature and stuff like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Dr. Lovelace?
Yeah, so our previous caller was asking a question around curriculum, which is somewhat related, I think, to your question, which is who is the gatekeeper, as it were, about either materials that students are using in the schools or speakers that may come to the schools and speak on behalf of or be honored by a school. And to come back to some advice I gave to the lady before is engaging with the leadership. You know, every school has someone to whom they report in terms of who are they as a Catholic school. For a parish school, it would be the pastor of the parish, right? And then potentially the bishop of the diocese. When you get into universities, it can be a little more complicated as to how they're related to, whether it's a religious order or they may have an independent board and so forth. So it's always asking if you have a concern as a constituent or as a parent who has a student, is always to inquire, well, again, how do you decide whether this speaker is appropriate or not appropriate in regards to the content that they will be sharing on the campus or whether their personal lives maybe align with Catholic teachings and so forth, is always advocating for yourself as a constituent, as a parent. Please explain to me how you made this decision, because again, that information is usually helpful to know why that decision was made. And then I think just in general, I think it's really good for us as Catholics to re-embrace what the social justice teaching of the Catholic Church is. I think sometimes that two-word phrase, social justice, can be used by some as code for something that doesn't actually align with the church teaching. And there are many resources out there that you can go and find out what is the social teaching of the Catholic Church. And really that term social justice, what that can become almost like a Rorschach test in a certain way. People ascribe to it what they want it to mean.
Right.
But the Catholic social teaching is a defined body of teaching that the Catholic Church offers. And so always bringing the conversation back to how does this program, book, speaker, where is this connected to Catholic social teaching? And again, changing the language, using the language of social teaching instead of social justice, because justice is justice, right? But what is the social teaching of the church? Those would be places to bring the conversation back to, I would say.
Maurice, I hope that was helpful to you. That seemed awful helpful to me, but I am at my break. I got to take this. Dr. Darren Lovelace is our guest from Cristo Rey High School in Sacramento, California. We're talking Catholic education. If you have questions about Catholic education, the number 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment. In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
The EWTN Radio Listener Comment Line is open right now for you. If you've got a question or comment about what you hear on EWTN Radio, we'd love to hear it. Call 205-795-5773. We'd also like to know how our programming has impacted your life or the life of someone you know. That number again, 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live, talking with Dr. Darren Lovelace from the principal, in fact, of Cristo Rey High School. And it did strike me, from the questions we've gotten, you get a sense of not a high level of trust in Catholic schools at the moment. I wonder if that's something you experience. Is that just here at Catholic Answers, or is that a general?
I mean, I think in engaging with Catholic educators, to the extent that I've been able to, through, for example, the Cristo Rey Network, where there are schools around the country, I think the conversation around, to get back to the parents as the primary educator, in what ways are we encouraging parents to engage with the schools so that they're able to ask these kinds of questions and find out, right, if they're going to entrust their child to us as a Catholic school, what does that mean?
Yeah. I have to say, one thing I have learned because I get to travel for this job is there is magnificent Catholic education out there. It's not always the case, but there is magnificent Catholic, where they really have a sense of mission, where the school is a community. It's a community that really loves the students and cares about the students. So that's, I do think we can sometimes hear the, you know, you see one picture of the Catholic school flying the pride flag and you think, oh, it's all gone to, you know.
I think there is a wide, yes, the Catholic schools are like the Catholic Church, which is, there's a great breadth.
Yeah.
And there certainly are many examples of both positive and negative realities in Catholic schools.
All right, let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, see what they think about Catholic schools up there. Listening, of course, on the Spirit Catholic Radio Network. Greg in Omaha, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Interesting conversation, and my question kind of builds off of what some of the other callers had asked about. I'm concerned about content and how we verify what is actually being taught in the classroom, and is it based in the catechism? So in other words, is there anything that exists or needs to be implemented, like an internal structure of checks and balances? I mean, I know that, you know, teachers are responsible, principals, pastor, bishop, but depending on the age of the child, they may not know what they're being taught deviates from Catholic teaching. So is there any internal structure to keep checks and balances on that?
Well, I would say there's certainly a school by school reality that, every school is an incarnation, so to speak, of the work of Catholic education. And while those accountability structures you're talking about certainly exist, especially if you're talking about a parochial school, right? The school pastor, the parish pastor is typically, you know, the overseer of the school. Sometimes there's a board, depending on your diocese, that may be responsible for the operations of the school. But there's certainly someone that you can go to and ask clarifying questions if you are unsure or it's unclear to you and your student brings home something that raises questions for you. Your teacher, of course, would be the first line of question, and you would expect a teacher to be able to give you a coherent answer about why something was chosen. And hopefully, again, you as a parent have the communication structures in place where you can reach out to and engage with your child's teachers regularly and find out what's happening in their classrooms, right? So I think those are the checks and balances. And ultimately, it is it is the parents' both right and prerogative to be able to have that kind of interaction. You are the check and the balance, I think, in some ways, in your school and with other parents, right? You are a community of parents who have committed your students' care to these teachers in the school, and you should be have the opportunity and take it if those structures aren't obvious to you, is to ask for them. You know, how can we be more involved? How can I be more involved as a parent in what's happening within my child's school?
What do you think, Greg?
That sounds like a reasonable approach.
That's the problem with Doc. That's what I'm calling him now. He seems reasonable about all this stuff. Dr. Darren Lovelace is our guest. Our number is 888-318-7884. Greg, thank you for the call. Now we go from Omaha, Nebraska down to Florida. Diane in Florida, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a grandmother who 25 years ago saw my little grandson come home from his Catholic school with a book called Captain Underwear. And it was all about a professor or teacher who was pictured in his underwear, various situations, and it came from a Catholic school. So little did I realize at the time, I should have spoken up, but I didn't. And I think it's up to the parents to actually look at the content. This was a library book, and I want to go and actually ask our schools now, and I'm in a different state altogether, a different school system, but I think parents and grandparents really have to take the bull by the horns and find out how many saints books are in your library compared to the secular books that the children have to choose from. And I don't know about the publisher of their classroom books, but there's a publisher whose name I would like to I'll say it. It's called the Scholastic Company, Scholastic Books. Hmm. If you have them in your school, it's not good. And they are pervasive throughout all education. And it's probably a matter of finances because they're probably the most affordable and therefore they're accepted.
Could you just, because I wonder what it is that you find objectionable, and I'm not objecting to this, I just don't know, in scholastic books.
Are you talking about the content I just told you about?
No, I mean, I don't, like scholastic books you name particularly.
That's the name of the company?
Yes.
I don't know if you look at the publisher who you buy from in your schools, but this company is well known for having very, very questionable material for the children. Now, compared to being required to read or just having available books about the saints so that the children have real life images of real people to look up to rather than these Pokemon type of cartoon characters that are supposed to present some kind of moral teaching to children that all they can relate to is non-natural looking creatures and people that are made up to tickle their senses, I guess.
Yeah, but that's it. If I may say, Diane, I think that when you said tickle their senses, you are exactly on the money. That we have a lot of people publishing to children and young adults who are appealing to the lower appetites, and it's idiotic. I don't know anything about Scholastic, but there is let's get the question to Dr. Lovelace. I mean, help us out here.
Well, Diane, I think you're describing something that is pretty pervasive, from my limited experience, of course. But I do think it is often the case that we think too little of our children's capacity.
Amen.
To deal with deep thinking and deep things. And so if we feed them candy, right, rather than feeding them something more substantial, then we're likely to get the product that would follow from that. So I agree. You started off by saying it. Yes, it's definitely the parents and the grandparents who are the ones who should come back with the question, and it's a question I have already recommended once or twice already just in this hour, which is asking the teacher why this book and not another You know, why is this Captain Underpants the best example you can find of the lesson you want to teach my child? And if that's the case, then you can help out. So I can do some research, because there are plenty of other books out there. There are plenty of other publishers out there, whether it's Scholastic or someone else, that can provide the solid, good examples of literature that even at that grade level, you could find stories that students can learn from. My goodness, Aesop's Fables would be a better choice than Captain Underpants, right? So there are ways that you can advocate for that. But this makes me think of a story, right? And you're going to have to go with me on this one. But there was a soldier whose name was Ignatius back in the 1500s.
Oh, I know how the story
ends.
Oh, yeah,
this one?
I know this story. All right.
Okay.
Hang on, Diane. It's a good one.
Ignatius was from the Basque region, and he was in a battle, and he got injured by a cannonball that nearly shattered his leg. He was laid up in the castle where his family was of nobility, but he was laid up in the castle, and he wanted to read romance novels. You know, he wanted to read these stories about, the stories of the time, the knights and the shining armor and the maidens in distress and so forth, but they didn't have any of those. So what they had were the lives of the saints. And so he was laid up in this castle, could do nothing but read. He read the lives of the saints. And this, of course, became someone very famous, Ignatius of Loyola, who founded the Jesuits. So, you know, his path was perhaps if he had been given romance novels, who knows what we wouldn't have had. But because he had the opportunity to read the lives of the saints, it inspired him. And he became someone that even the world now knows, and his work has inspired and influenced the lives of millions and millions of people. So, you know, we offer our students in our schools the best. That's what we should offer them. And you're right. I wouldn't say that Captain Underpants is probably the best.
No, and I think a lot of people are intimidated by the culture. They're afraid to be the prude or something. But you're not a prude because you say that's not good enough for my kid. Mm-hmm. That's not prudish. That's just having standards for your kid. Diana, I want to come back to you and see if that answer from Dr. Lovelace satisfied you, or if you had more.
Well, you're correct. I think that's how we come up with the sloppy culture that we have today, is because we've let this slide downhill so long. Everybody's aware of it, but nobody knows how to deal with it or doesn't want to even touch it. And it's too difficult.
It's funny, if I may say,
it's faithful to.
We can turn
back the clock if we all make the effort.
You know, I do think with younger parents, it's odd, but it seems to me like in the last 4 or 5 years, there is an actual change in this, and they don't want to feed their kids junk food for the mind. I do think they were raised on it, and I think they see how idiotic it is. And not only that, it's not just idiotic. I mean, some of the young adult literature is just pernicious. There's some that's evil. I mean, His Dark Materials, no child should ever be exposed to that junk. Absolute. It's worse than junk. It's pernicious. It's insidious. It's a way of catechizing children away from God. That's actually what it is. It's a way of catechizing children away from God. I do think that this younger generation, though, is they're not stupid. They've been exposed to this stuff. And they're not feeding their kids junk for the mind.
I think so, Diane. I would also, I don't know at what stage you have students still in schools, but if they're Catholic schools, you could recommend Ignatius Press now offers book fairs. I can remember when I was in school, there were Scholastic book fairs.
There was only Scholastic,
right?
Probably,
exactly.
Yeah.
So Ignatius Press now offers a book fair. So they would, and I participated in this when I was principal in Denver. Very successful, lots of alternatives for students, solid literature that's either Catholic authors or, you know, materials, Lord of the Rings and things like that, and other kinds of fantasy books that appeal to students, but definitely are much more solid than what you're talking about.
Diane, thanks very much for the call, and I do appreciate the conversation. I hope that I'm right, that some of these young parents are figuring it out. Too much junk food for the mind. Not enough just really good stuff. And the good stuff isn't boring. It's I mean, there's nothing more fascinating than the Lord of the Rings that you mentioned. It's just great. but it's got it's of a different standard than Captain Underpants. Dr. Darren Lovelace, principal of Crystal Ray High School in Sacramento, thank you so much for coming down
really
and spending the hour
it.
With us. I really appreciate it. Give us a little hope. We've got sensible people, and we need sensible people in charge of Catholic education.
There are plenty out there.
Yeah, there are plenty, I'm glad we got to meet one today. Again, thank you very much for the calls. Those who called, sorry for the one. We did one call we weren't able to get on. I apologize. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.